Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. My guest today on Better Than I Found It is Jeff Champ, father of three-time PGA Tour winner Cameron Champ. Despite not being a golfer himself, he was actually a baseball player. Jeff was 100% in support of Cameron's desire to make golf his passion when he was young. Jeff talks about being a father of a nationally prominent junior player, and he also gives some great advice to help other parents through that process. But Jeff is much, much more than that. His day-to-day passion is now the Cameron Champ Foundation, whose mission is to be committed to unlocking the potential in and transforming the lives of youth from underserved and underrepresented communities. Jeff was responsible for the creation of an annual junior tournament called the Mac Champ Invitational in honor of his father, Mac Champ, who passed away in 2019 after a courageous battle with stomach cancer. The tournament's mission is to provide a premier competitive experience for junior golfers from diverse backgrounds, to create an event where players and their families can connect with each other, share their journeys, and build relationships that will last a lifetime. And finally, to provide a springboard into top-tier junior tournaments and college scholarships for young players. Jeff Champ is one of the hardest working tournament organizers that I have seen and a true inspiration to all that know him. He's a good friend of mine, and I think you'll enjoy hearing his story. I'd like to thank everyone for joining me again on Better Than I Found It. Today's guest is Jeff Champ. Jeff is not only the father of a PGA Tour winner, Cameron Champ, but also the CEO and co-founder of the Cameron Champ Foundation, something, a real passion that occupies his time these days. And Jeff, I just want to say thanks for being here with me.
Thanks for having me, Coach.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is great. You're in Texas this week. I'm in Texas this week. I'm getting ready to take our team to the regional in about a week. We're going to North Carolina. But I came down to watch a golf tournament that's very, very important to you, and we're going to get to that in a bit. But I also thought this would be a great time for me to do a podcast with somebody I got to know during the junior golf recruiting process, the college golf world, and now followed your son in pro golf. So I really do appreciate you spending some time with me.
No, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, it's been a while. I haven't seen you. In fact, I haven't seen you at all since Cameron got out of college. But I saw you a lot during his college time, and certainly a lot during the recruitment time. But I have a lot I want to get to. But before I start, let's talk about that first time we met. I knew of him, knew who he was, had heard all the legendary stories about Cameron hitting the ball so far, and I just had to see for myself. And he came to Stillwater, Oklahoma with you when I was still at Oklahoma State, and he was playing in the Ping Invitational. And I'll just describe what the one thing I remembered vividly, and that is the 16th hole with no wind help, 3 wood and a lob wedge to the middle of the green. Still have never seen it to this day. I mean, goodness gracious, what a first impression.
Yeah, he could always bomb it. You know, that was one of the things that I saw at an early age. You know, he could hit it, but at the same time, he got to learn how to play the game of golf. But he does have some power.
Well, he did. He knew how to play the game. You could tell already. But you also knew he had a skill that you can't teach, and that is just raw speed and power. And it was the easiest looking speed I'd ever seen on a good player. I'd never seen anybody whose speed was generated so effortlessly, at least to the eye. So it was really fun. But I'll never forget that day at the Ping Invitational. And I said to myself, people told me this Cameron was long, but man, a 3 wood and a lob wedge to 16, that just doesn't happen.
And you know what's funny, Coach, is that, you know, some of that we were getting ready for T ball and training for baseball. And a lot of people talk about these days about getting speed early as a young child. Sometimes you can't go back and get that speed.
Right.
If you start playing, kicking a soccer ball at 12 years old, it's different than kicking it at 5 years old. And I think some of the training we were doing for baseball back in those days were building hand-eye coordination. It had nothing to do with actually hitting the baseball. It was just quickness. And I think he had to step up on a lot of kids early on. I think today, when you look at that, that's why his swing is pretty natural.
I think a lot of people are training that way nowadays too, and some of them are doing it after the fact. So they're 25 years old, I'm going to do some speed training. Mm-hmm. You know, if they'd have done that when they were young. I remember reading about Jack Nicklaus and how he played all these other sports, but Jack Grout
told him, swing as hard as you can, as fast as you can. We'll learn, we'll find it, and we'll learn how to hit it straight one day. But you just, and he created a lot of speed very early on in an athletic way. And I think Cameron was just the modern day. I mean, he was just the new prototypical, you know, this is the modern day tour player. You're not going to see a lot of, and no disrespect, but Corey Pavins and Scott Verplanks and Jeff Sluman's and Fred Funk's were fantastic at what they did, but that's not the modern day.
And modern day, I mean, these kids today are fit.
Oh.
I mean, I look at Kevin sometimes like, he got that swimmer body. You know, these kids are fit and they're working out and doing all those things that might not have happened, you know, 25 years ago.
Probably wouldn't have happened, but you know, first time I saw him and laid eyes on him, I thought, okay, that's an athlete. And you could tell the pendulum was shifting. And Charles Howell, who played, I was an assistant coach at Oklahoma State when he played there. And every year, Charles and I would talk. We'd catch up, usually in December, when he was in off season, coming back and visiting his wife's family. And Charles would always ask me, tell me about this new generation. I said, Charles, you don't need to worry about these guys. He said, yeah, they're going to be out here. Every year you send several more out here. And they're longer than they were when I was a kid. And I said, yeah, Charles, they're not getting any shorter.
And Charles was long.
And he was long. And he was long. And he's still long at 45 right now for his age. But he just couldn't. To him, it was very obvious that the tour was going to be filled with guys that could hit it.
Yeah.
Cameron's not just another one. He's very long still for the tour, but he's another in a line of succession of long players.
Yes, sir.
So where did all that start? I mean, I know we're going to talk about your father, Mac, and his influence on it, but tell me how you got him into the game, because I know he played other sports.
Yeah, so, you know, in the community that I grew up in, there was no golfers. There was a military base. We had a golf course that closed. But my father, when my father retired, was the same time I started a screen printing and brewery business. And we dropped my son off to grandma and grandpa's house, and that's how we got started. They started in the backyard, hitting some wedges for probably 2 years. Before I even knew that he was even playing golf, and he never said nothing to us. And at about 5 years old, he went that long. They went over two years without even saying.
Didn't even tell you. That
didn't even say anything.
I'm going to make a golfer out of this boy.
No, they were just doing things. They were just doing things. And it was grandpa and grandpa. And he finally showed me at 5 years old, and I was like, you know, I don't know golf, but I play professional sports. I'm like, there's some talent here. God gave him some gift. And I'm like, we might have to try to go running in this different direction here.
Well, interestingly enough, and I'm going to read something here in a minute about your father, how he got into the game was kind of unusual as well. But describe your life as a junior golf parent. I watch, as I've coached 100 years now in collegiate golf, I've watched junior golf parents kind of evolve and change and move, you know, go back and forth, and there's been some incredible ones, and there's been some I know some parents that don't even, they're following, but they're not even really knowing what the score is, and you know, other parents that live and die by every shot. And I tell them, I said, you got to be careful. If you live and die by every shot, you're going to die a lot. Because it's hard to watch golf that impassionately. But tell me about you as a junior golf parent.
You know, it was an amazing journey, but there's also tough times. You know, looking back at it with, you know, where we are today and what we're doing, would I make some changes? Of course. I think we all would in life. And probably some of the changes that I would make. I mean, I asked Cameron this at last Christmas. We have a new grandson. He's 8 months old, Beckham. And the one question I asked my son, I said, hey, you know, I always had this guilt inside sometimes. And I said, do you think, was I too hard on you? You know, and when he told me, no, Dad, you weren't, I was actually shocked a little bit.
You felt like you were.
I feel like I were.
Yeah.
But he goes, no, the only thing that you did that I didn't want to do sometimes is you said Saturday we're going to golf course at 9. Well, I wanted to go, but I didn't want to go till 12. And I said, but you got to understand, son, now that you're a father, you got more responsibilities than just yourself, you know, or your son. And so he totally, and I waited to ask this question until he had a child, you know, to ask that question. And so looking back at that, you know, one of the things that I asked him at 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, I said, you know, we still have a chance to play baseball because I was a baseball player. But once you hit about 12 years old, if you're getting the game that late to try to make it, it's going to be very difficult because you're so far behind. And he goes, Dad, I want to play pro golf. I said, so if you want to play pro golf, you got to understand what you just said. You're committing yourself and sacrificing yourself because not everybody can do that. And that means there could be no Disneyland, that could be the no to this. And he goes, that's what I want. So when you take that, I think he still has similar DNA than I have. So, you know, there is a fine line. There's a fine line with push. And some kids have to be pushed. And some kids can just naturally do it on their own.
Did Cameron?
You kind of have to push him.
You had to push him a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that surprised me.
You kind of have to push him in the classroom. Yeah. You kind of have to push him. He's a 3.5, but, you know, you kind of make sure that he, you know, he gets it done. You know, but he's, you know, it's been an amazing journey, and you know, what he's doing for his family now and generations is special.
Yeah, I think so too. We're going to talk about a foundation here in a bit too. That's something pretty special. But if you could describe a pitfall as a junior golf parent, what advice would you give to other junior golf parents of kids that are coming up as really good players that you could avoid?
One of the things I think I probably would avoid is the conversation in the car after a tournament. Mm. Conversation home. We know our children is trying to do the best they can. And man, as J.R. Ryder just said last week, the reason why so many pro athletes who retire want to play this game because they can't conquer it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, and so as parents, you want the best for your kid, but you got to know who your kid is and know how to communicate with them. But one of the things I would say that if I could do over again, is not have those conversations in the car. You can have it when you get home mm-hmm. and talk about it, but right after a tournament, everybody's a little emotional. You just can't have that conversation.
You know, I know better than that too, but occasionally I'll ask a kid something about the round when I know he's still in an emotional state. And I'll mm-hmm. catch myself, and it's like, and in fact, it happened once this year where one of my players said, "Coach, if I could just have a little time to decompress, mm-hmm. we'll definitely talk, but I can't talk right now."
Yeah,
and I thought, you know what? I know better than that. So
yeah, no, yeah.
But that is excellent, great advice, because usually the parent thinks, I need to get what I need to, what I've observed, I've got to tell him now or else. Well, no, he's too emotional right now. You know, I always tell people, you've made clear-minded decisions in your life, and you've made emotional decisions in your life, mm-hmm. but you've never made a clear-minded emotional decision.
No.
They don't go together.
True.
So if you don't allow the kid some time to decompress and you just go right in on him, he's going to be in, that's not going to be a very good conversation right there.
No, no.
Great advice. Let the kid get home, decompress, and then you can talk about the tournament.
You can talk about the tournament. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when Johnny Kiefer, who's a fifth-year senior for me, been an All-American a couple of times, when he was a freshman, we were playing a tournament in Oregon, and he signed an incorrect scorecard. And so he called me over to the scoring tent, and he's crying, and he's had, you know, it was a really desperate thing. He thought he cost his team, all of that. And his dad and mom don't know what's happening. They're over behind the ropes. And mm-hmm. so I said, "Collect yourself, Johnny. You're going to go have lunch with your teammates, and we'll get in the van, and we'll go home. No problem." And his dad called me over and said, "What happened?" And I said, "Well, John, he signed an incorrect scorecard. And unfortunately, he's disqualified for this week." And John looked at me and says, "Well, that's probably good to learn that lesson now, isn't it?" And I thought, wow, I've got the right guy here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I would, you know, most parents would have just been really upset. And John was like, "That's probably good. Freshman, college, learn that lesson now. It's great." Mm-hmm. So you as a parent probably made some mistakes too.
Many mistakes.
Yeah.
Many mistakes. And also, you know, when you look back at it, you know, where I also think sometimes, you know, where families come from and some of their journey causes some of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the mistakes I've made in my life caused me to give everything to my son, and sometimes a little too much,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah. So I think it's the more we can be as calm and collective as we can, the better it is for the child.
Yeah, if you think about it, I say that if you live and die by every shot, you're going to die a bunch. It's like,
yeah,
it's just part of that process of getting him. I mean, could you have dreamed, I was going to ask my next question, could you have dreamed your son would win 3 times on the PGA Tour? He might end up winning 15 or 20 times. Who knows? Could you ever dream that 10 years ago?
No.
Yeah. There's probably no way to dream that, is there?
I remember our dream was get a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Network with everybody you possibly can so you can get a middle management in the corporate world. And that's, you know, and if pro golf works out, it works out. And if not, guess what? Golf is taking you into the corporate world very, very nicely.
Oh, yeah. If golf ended for him tomorrow, he's got, he's got that is professional golf at that end. He's still got that other skill that he can take into the business world if he needed to.
Yes.
Hopefully that doesn't have to happen. But so we mentioned your dad earlier, and I read an excerpt from something online about how he got into the game. He got into the game, he was in the Air Force, and he was overseas, and that's how he kind of got into the game. Started, played his first full round of golf in 1965, and he was so proud he shot 132. It was like he kept score in his very first round of golf.
Yes.
And then that a lifelong love for the game. I mean, he said, I had the bug. You know, I shot 132, I had the bug. So he actually taught Cameron to play golf without you knowing it for a couple of years.
Yes, absolutely.
So how was this impact that Mac had on him? Because he didn't have that impact on you as a golfer because you were a baseball player.
He never introduced golf to me. But part of that comes back to, you know, my dad grew up in segregation and he can only caddy, him and his brothers caddied. Mm-hmm. And that's where it really started. They start caddying and they actually made more money than their parents made caddying.
Oh, wow.
You know, and his mother used to iron clothes for certain people, and that's how she made her living. And so when my dad was finally able to play in a golf course, he was in the military, and it just changed his world. But when he started having kids, it was like, I'm not making enough money.
I can't afford to play
golf. I can't afford to play golf no more. Yeah. So he started playing golf for maybe 4 years, and then it was done. And so, you know, he had a second job to pay for vacations and pay for, you know, the kids to play sports. And then when he retired from military and then civilian, you know, federal, after 40-some years, was the same time Cameron was born. And, man, he ran with it. He was a marshal at the golf course. I mean, he was at a golf course every day.
Was he a marshal to get to play the free golf, right?
Well, no. What he was interesting. He was a marshal so his grandson could get free golf balls at the range.
Okay. All right. That's genius right there.
So that's how it all got started.
Yeah. If you get free practice balls, you can get good pretty quick.
Yes. Yeah. So that's how that worked out.
Well, you know, I also read another story too about when Cameron won the Safeway Open in 2019. It was a pretty special victory because Mac was in the final stages of stomach cancer. So can you kind of take me through that whole process? You did before we did this recording. I really love that story.
Yeah. You know, my dad had a kidney transplant, probably in mid 2017, at 70 something years old. Was kind of unheard of. And my dad was a marshal at a golf course, a muni course, and the 49er ladies, they call them the 49er ladies. Some of these ladies are 90 years old playing golf.
Oh my gosh.
And some were grumpy. they got their own way, but my dad always had a big smile on his face, and they loved him. And he's the one that could handle the ladies and get them through the 18 holes. And it came across that one of the individuals had an aunt or somebody who just passed away. Mm-hmm. And through that process, my dad got a kidney transplant.
That's really rare at 77.
But the one thing is, he didn't drink. Mm-hmm. Didn't smoke, and he was so healthy.
Good candidate.
He was a perfect candidate. Yeah. He was a perfect candidate. You know, moving forward, you know, my dad, 18 months later, was diagnosed with cancer, mm-hmm. which went quick. Yeah. And, you know, part of that was probably because of the steroid he was taking every day for his kidney transplant. And, you know, Cameron knows about, you know, Grandpa has cancer, but he doesn't know it's for. We're not telling him it's for. So he needs to go play golf. He don't need to worry about that because knowing Cameron, he'd come home and mm-hmm. forget golf and just hang out with his grandpa. And so,
you haven't told him how serious it is.
We didn't tell him how serious it was. He comes home for a charity event on a Saturday, and on our way after the charity event, we're driving home, and we have to tell him, hey, just so you know, Grandpa has a bed in the living room. It's for stage cancer. He doesn't have much time. And sorry.
That's okay. Good. Yeah.
And so Cameron said, you know, he's not playing. And my dad said, you're playing.
So Cameron told his grandpa, I'm not playing. I'm going to be here with you.
Yeah.
He said, you go play.
Yeah, go play. And Cameron, you know, whatever Grandpa says, he's going to, you know, it's Grandpa's his hero, not me. I'm not his hero. Grandpa's his hero. And he went down Thursday morning. Tee time at 11 o'clock, went down Thursday morning, no practice round, nothing. Went down, just go play golf.
He won the golf
tournament. And he wins a golf tournament.
I mean, that's like an unbelievable story, honestly, because he really wasn't going to play in the tournament when he found out his grandpa was that sick. So it's amazing.
But it just tells you one thing about how great this game of golf is, because when something's bigger than you and you're not just focused on every shot, he could care less. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could have cared less. And then next thing you know, it's like, man, you win, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think it's a teachable moment to people out there playing this game of golf.
Yeah, I talk to players all the time. You care too much about this game, and you're not playing well because you care too much. So he probably just took his mind off the pressure of playing, but he's got this big trophy in his hands. Tell me the story about how he took it back to Grant. Yeah,
so, you know, after you win, you have to hang out and do a bunch of different stuff. And we had a little condo, so with people that were there and the family that was there, one of my few, my uncle stayed, and two good friends stayed with my dad the whole time and watched it, but everybody else was down in Napa. And we had pizza. We had pizza to kind of celebrate real quick and then drive home. And we get home, walk in. My dad's actually laying on the floor because that's comfortable for him. Mm-hmm. He's laying on the floor, and Cameron goes, "Pops, I did it for you.
Here's the trophy.
Here's the trophy." And he says, "You better have won that, or you should have won that, or something." I don't know. I can't remember exactly what he said. And we just laughed. We laughed like, well, that's like supposed to happen all the time.
Did Mac think it was that easy to win a professional golf tournament?
I think at that moment that when he was going through, he probably thought it was pretty easy.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, I just, you know, I look back on when Harvey Pinnock was so sick and Ben Crenshaw went and won the Masters that week. Ben Crenshaw had no business winning the Masters. He had missed 6 out of the last 7 cuts.
Oh, wow.
And the inspiration that Harvey said, go back. You go back to Augusta and win that tournament. And he did. Mm. I think sometimes when it's bigger than you are, it probably helps a lot. But so that was the last tournament he got to see him play. He passed away not too long after that, correct?
Yes. So he passed away. Yeah, he passed away about 30 days later.
Yeah. But he did watch it on television that day.
Oh, he watched it on television, and he knew his grandson's going to the Masters.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
So as much as we wanted my dad to go to Augusta and see that, when Cameron won his first tournament in Sanders Farms, mm-hmm. that was an off week tournament, so you don't get the... But when he... when he won the Augusta, Grandpa knew he's going to the Masters.
So that was a big moment for him.
So before he passed, that was a big moment.
Well, so that kind of brings me to, we're going to talk about the Mac Champ Invitational that I'm actually here to watch this week and going to speak at the banquet. But and we can't speak about any individual players or anything like that. But so let's talk about two things. One, the Cameron Champ Foundation. Mm-hmm. Of which you are the CEO and co-founder, and then obviously the Mac Champ Invitational, and where the genesis of all that. So tell me about how all this came about, because you've got a pretty big job right now managing all of this.
No, I do. It's passion, you know. I thank my wife every day for letting me do what I love to do. It's 7 days a week. Sometimes I got an office in our house. And mm-hmm. If I don't watch a lot of TV, I go in the room when I get bored and just get some work done. But the Cameron Champ Foundation got started in Sacramento. We our family grew up in the county, and the city areas have a lot of different programs for inner city kids and after school programs. But we were a neighborhood that there wasn't much for these kids, and the community kept getting worse and worse and more things like that. And I'm like, we have to do something. You know, I'm a big believer that when you can get yourself out of certain situations and become better and do mm-hmm. what you need to get back to your own community to lift up the next group of kids. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of great kids in there.
Without opportunity.
Without opportunity and exposure and knowledge, it is what it is. And so, golf kept us in that community until I was 50 years old. So we had gangbangers 2 doors down. We got cops flying, helicopters every night. You know, that's how Cameron grew up. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't realize that. The reason why he has probably 50 acres in Hockley, Texas now with no helicopter. And he knows both sheriffs in Waller County. And he's friends with them.
By the way, Hockley, Texas is a cool place.
Oh, it's...
There's a great golf course there, obviously, the golf club, Houston Oaks.
Yeah,
But it's a neat place. It's good old Texas.
Oh, yeah, it's good old Texas, you know, and he just loves it out there. And so, you know, kind of going through this, realizing that, we're like, hey, let's start the Cameron Champ Foundation. And so in 2018, is that right? I'm 19. We took over Foothill Golf Course. That's where Cameron learned to play golf at 5 years old. It's a par three course, about 1,200 yards. At one time, it probably had 20 golfers a day when we took over, and now we're doing very well. Kids in certain zip codes can play golf for free.
So is the golf course attached to the foundation?
Golf course attached to the foundation. Yeah. Well, it's a separate entity, but it's a separate entity, but it is attached.
So some kids get to play for free if they're in the county. So
if you live in certain zip codes, I know my zip codes, and you can play golf for free, or academy or clinics, golf is free. And then other kids can play golf for $5 all day long.
Which is basically free as well.
Which is basically as well. Yeah. But, you know, we have our big program is there's nothing free in life. You know, well, one thing that we have to teach these children in the community I grew up in is that there's nothing free, because once you kind of start going that route, it's going to take you down a bad path. And, you know, making kids feel good, you know, do it. Kids who don't have something, I'm big about kids that don't have to still give back to somebody that don't have.
Oh, yeah.
It just puts you in a better place. And so that's what we did. We took over the golf course, and now we're kind of, you know, getting that going. We got STEM education. We got gaming truck. We drive gaming trucks. We partner with the police and sheriff in Sacramento, and we drive these gaming trucks with Xbox and stuff and the kids and the communities, and trying to build that relationship with law enforcement in a positive way with these children.
Well, that is wonderful. So that's part of all the goals, the long-term goals. Yes, short-term goals to kind of get that going, but long-term goals, keep it moving. Right?
Keep it moving, STEM education. At the end of the day, it's education, but it's using golf as a vehicle.
Yeah.
But it's education is the key thing for us.
Have you been able to have Cameron go to events there and do some things?
Oh, yeah. We've done clinics. We've done a lot of things. One thing that, you know, a lot of people don't know with Cam is that in just our whole family, including myself, is that we can fit in anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We can fit in the corporate space, and we can fit in the neighborhood that
you live in.
It's tough.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a certain way, you know, and to me, it's a blessing. It's a blessing because we get to understand as a family all the different cultures and what's going on in different communities.
Does the community itself understand and know what you're doing? I mean, a lot of people in the community know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's wonderful. That's great.
Yes, 100%.
So... that's great. I hope that kid continues to thrive. Keep doing the good work you're doing there. But the Mac Champ Invitational, tell me about that. I know obviously it's in memory of your dad, and there's some goals and some things you want to accomplish. So tell me about that with the tournament.
Yeah, so the Mac Champ Invitational came about, it was through COVID. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to you.
Yeah,
you
I was going
to
come.
I remember talking to you, you know, and it's interesting, like, with you coaches that I have so much respect for, you know, I was like, you know what, let me call Coach, he can come out, and then COVID hit for 2 years. But so it kind of backed us up a little bit. But the Mac Champ Invitational got started in 2012. Cameron played in the Bill Dickey Invitational. Bill Dickey Invitational got started in, I believe, 1997. And man, they, you know, what that organization did for so long was amazing. Cameron in 2012 plays in the Bill Dickey. He wins it, which is similar to what the Mac Champ is today. He gets an exemption into the PGA Junior Championship. Mm-hmm. Holes out, chips off the green, the 72nd hole to get the second place behind Robbie Shelton. All these guys you just
friends. I was there that day.
Oh,
yeah, I was.
And next thing you know, he's on the Ryder Cup team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's he got exposure through an opportunity. They might not, because we don't know nothing about some of this stuff. And when the Bill Dickey Invitational kind of went away after Bill passed away and a few of his board members, we just saw a need. We saw a need. And a lot of our children in the black and brown space of golf is behind the curve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 2 years behind the curve. And there's talent, but is just understanding it. Sometimes it's first generation playing golf. And so they just don't understand what they have to do. So we thought, hey, you know.
You didn't either, though. When you first started, you really didn't know, did you?
I didn't either, but But me being playing pro baseball and the work ethic, takes care of all
that. Yeah, it does take
work ethic takes care of everything. Yeah. It'll take care of you not having knowledge. You'll figure that out. And sacrifice, you know. When I've had, you know, talking to some of these parents at this banquet that you're gonna speak to tonight, some of the things they talk about sacrifice, perseverance, all those kind of things. And I lost my train of thought, but I know
you're good. No, we're talking about the Invitational. Champ.
Yeah. So through the Bill Dickey, when the Bill Dickey no longer was having, we're like, Grandpa, this passed away, man. Let's do something in his name. And you know, with all the relationships that we had through junior golf, and now we're getting back to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
We gave 66 exemptions, opportunities to kids last year from the MAC Champ.
Mm.
In 2022, we gave like 27 exemptions to opportunities that these kids would never have. But I'm a big believer that you can't just take exemptions and not perform.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm a big stickler about that because nobody wants to give you another opportunity. But through the relationships that we had through Cameron's junior golf, I know all these tournament directors.
Mm-hmm.
And we built friendships. You know, we sent thank you cards. All these things that go back 12 years later, we never realized we were going to stay, you know, we're going to talk to them again. And when I explained to them what we're trying to accomplish, they're like, Jeff, I'm on board. 4 years later, we have 5 kids getting into the Western Junior Am on their own merit.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
4 years ago, we had 0.
Yeah.
So it tells you, it's just education, exposure, and making sure that, you know, you're helping these kids. But the biggest thing that we did was just trying to help minorities in the brown and black space get an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But diversity is all children. So this year we actually have two Caucasian kids, you know, because they also need the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I know who they are.
Yeah.
I know who their parents are, and they're late in the game. Like one kid has been a skier. 4 years ago, he wants to play golf. Now, does his parents have a financial? Yeah, no problem. But that doesn't mean he has opportunities.
Yeah, he has to have a place to play.
He still have opportunities. Yeah. And I know this kid. I know what he's trying to accomplish. I see him at the golf course, and he's not hanging out with all his high school buddies putting around, wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually working. And so you never know when somebody's watching you, and I've been watching him, and I said, hey, you want to play in our tournament? He goes, well, I'm not sure. I'm like, this is what this tournament's for.
Mm-hmm.
It's access.
It's about opportunity.
It's access and opportunity. Yeah. And so that's where we are today.
Well, I, for one, want to applaud you, because I know if kids are given opportunity, if they're given the opportunity, it's just give me the chance. And the kids with the work ethic, with the belief, with people that support them, they can get miles. You know, I'm sure you're going to also track these kids that you have playing this tournament, see college scholarships, college All-Americans, get on the tour one day, that type of stuff, which would be really cool.
Well, one thing I do track, and before you leave, I'm going to show you Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I'm not going to show you names because you're a college coach, so I don't want you to get in that, but I'm just going to show you a spreadsheet. You won't see any names, but you'll see numbers. I've been tracking all these kids for 4 years, every month. I do it manually.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out analytics, like the kids that are successful, what are they doing? Because they're all behind the curve. Most of them are all behind the curve, but the ones that are successful, what are they doing? And I'm trying to figure this stuff out. So then it's a common denominator as we build this thing out. How do we do this? How do we build a development program across the country? You know, now that USGA has one, that's great.
Yeah.
But I still think we have to have a grassroots program as well.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. I mean, it'll be fun to watch and see where these players go. So, I just thank you for one. You spent about 35 minutes here with me, but just giving me kind of the genesis of how all this came about. Where do you see this in 10 years? You're still a young man. You're a lot younger than I am, but you should be able to do this 10 or 15 more years, I would think.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to put it in place. You know, I mean, I work 7 days a week. I'm getting tired because I don't stop. And I kind of want to start doing the things that I want to do and the things that I don't want to do, because I'm going to do this until it's time for me to go, you know.
But you need to keep it in a spot where when you hand it off to somebody, that it's just
Yes.
You might have to get an assistant to train and mentor.
Well, we're working on this. I see us going, there's a good chance we're going to build something in Africa.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, we're going to build something in Africa. And let me tell you, I was in Ghana last year, met some people. They have 10 golf courses.
Oh, wow.
Only one golf course has full irrigation.
So it's all just whatever Mother Nature
is. Whatever Mother Nature is.
Yeah.
They go to the lagoon. They go to the lagoon. They get the water out, pump it into the water truck, the trailer, and that's how they water the greens.
Yeah. They only water greens, I assume.
They only water greens. Yeah. And these greens are playing at a 5.5.
See,
we just had a girl from Ghana come over here to play at the LPGA Chevron Championship at 12.5. And she's used to playing 5.5. She has no chance.
Yeah,
she has no chance. And so
you're even thinking about taking this to Africa.
We are. We are. So I just need to get through this tournament and work on some things. And we have some sponsors that want to get involved. And you've got to make sure that the academic pieces are crossing over.
Yep.
Because unfortunately, these kids don't have anything. The girl that came over here lives in a 150 square foot shanty.
Mm-hmm.
Dirt floor.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, if you walked in there, you would fall in love with her. Greatest smile, grateful, feels that she has everything.
Yeah, gratitude's a wonderful,
gratitude is a wonderful
human quality, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
It's
yes,
wonderful.
Sir.
Well, I, for one, am thankful for our friendship. Even though we don't get to see each other very often, it's great to catch up with you again. And I look forward to speaking to your group tonight. And then just continue to watch this. And Cameron, what did you shoot today at the Dallas?
You know what? I don't know.
Okay.
A friend said 4 under.
Yeah, I saw him. Like he was 2 under last time I checked.
Okay.
So I just
I didn't. Yeah. I'm focused on the kids.
You've got something else.
I can't help but play golf. So let me, he's doing his thing, and I'm trying to do my thing to, to help kids.
Well, that's great. Well, best of luck, and it's. I didn't know you were grandpa, so I think it's fantastic too.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes. On that. Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, thanks again, and best of luck with everything.
Appreciate it.